The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
Third hour is live. We appreciate all of you being with us here as we reach the midpoint of the show. Kelly Harper, a little bit later on, we started the program with Dawn Staley, the head coach of the number one team in women's basketball and the defending national champs. Let's get back to the calls. Coach Witt is up next in North Carolina. Hello, Coach.
Hey, Paul, how you doing? I hope you're having a great afternoon today.
Thank you very much, Coach. Appreciate you calling.
Sure thing. I was calling to follow up on what your caller asked about earlier about kids leaving high school early. I've had several kids do that, and it's not uncommon at all, and it's not just athletes. Most high schools now work on a semester system, and since there's some little bit of leeway in there for kids that fail a class or two to graduate on time, they're able to graduate a semester early, and they go on into college. It may be a trade program. I had a kid this year that graduated early, and he's an apprentice welder now. So it's not just something that athletes do.
Coach, a couple of things. In terms of curriculum, how are you able to do it earlier? In terms of, do you have to take extra workload, or how does that work?
No, typically, I know at our school in here in North Carolina, you have the opportunity to take 32 credits while you're in high school. Now, you can graduate with 28.
Okay.
They just, make sure they've got all their required classes by that last semester of their senior year, and they leave a semester early.
Secondly, what are you hearing back from just an adjustment period for people that normally would be entering their final 6 months of high school and suddenly they're parachuted on a big college campus, whether it's in your state or elsewhere? How does that work?
Well, most of the folks don't have any trouble with it because, as far as on the academic side, those that aren't involved in athletics, they're ready to accept the challenge. Quite a few of them have already taken classes at the community colleges here in our area. And then those that are athletes, they've been on campus and they've been around the support staff of the football program. They really have an advantage because they do have those support staffs where they can get tutorial help if they need it and things like that. It's pretty good. I don't know of any kid that has regressed in that situation. I think all of them have done well.
In terms of missing the and by the way, what I'm about to ask you is probably very dated, but in terms of missing the high school experience, are young people now just so geared to keep moving forward that's not a big deal?
Well, a lot of them are. A lot of them don't. You would think that the prom and graduation would be a good thing, a big thing to a lot of kids, but most of these kids, they're driven, they have a goal in mind, and they're willing to forego those things, so they can go ahead. Now, they'll come back for their graduation, in May or June. I know they're missing out on a lot, but they're also taking advantage. It's a big deal, particularly in athletics, to be there for the spring practice and be in the strength and conditioning program through that spring. It's almost like you've already had a redshirt year when you enter your true freshman fall.
And finally, Coach, I hate to interview you so much, but this is great information.
That's no problem, Paul.
In terms of what coaches want, obviously, I would want my guy on campus as fast as possible. I'm sure there's circumstances when that doesn't happen. How does that work with bigger programs? Not everyone goes early, do they?
No, not everybody. It's becoming more and more common. But we had a kid a couple of years ago who was in a special program in high school and he had to be there all 8 semesters. He was committed to that, and he had to do that to graduate. So he had to stay on campus, and that kind of puts him behind the eight ball a little bit.
Right.
It's really good for these kids to go ahead and go early, and that's one thing I think the SEC does a great job of is those graduate patches that they put on the jerseys. You know, by going a semester early, you can graduate 3 years earlier, you know, real easy, since you're probably going to be on campus during the summer anyway for, you know, summer workouts.
Oh, I realize anytime anybody says, man, things have changed, it just shows you how dated the comment is. But it is pretty remarkable about it.
Yes, sir. It's a different world out there now. Coaches used to want to see game film. Now they want to see a highlight reel. So it's changed quite a bit, you know, over the time that I was in it.
In terms of just a recruiting question, where, you know, if you go back to maybe the beginning of your career versus now, do you feel like the sophistication is significantly higher, or is evaluation the same in terms of, you know, coaches being able to see and spot a player today versus back then?
It's about the same. The combines have really taken off. You have some kids that are recruited simply because of their combine numbers. And those are usually those kids that get targeted early on. A lot of times that means that you're hard. Those kids that play hard and they're late developers, they end up going to a FCS school or a D2 school. That's changed a little bit from what it used to be. And of course, you know, now all recruiting is national. It used to be really regional, and now it's, you know, kids can go anywhere they want to pretty much if they have the ability.
Just finally, the NIL question I'm sure you've been waiting for. How does that work? I mean, what are you seeing from the high school level in terms of, you know, how dramatically different that element of the game is?
Well, I think it plays a part. I haven't dealt with any real five-star kids in a couple of years, so I don't know what the big boys are doing and things like that. But it plays a little bit of a role. But the kids that I've had in the last 4 or 5 years, most of them aren't, you know, at that level, like I say. And the NIL money that they're getting is, you know, not that much. But I do know that certain schools here in North Carolina, they, you know, everybody on the roster gets NIL money. So I think it makes an impression on kids. You know, $25,000 is a lot of money to a lot of kids.
Absolutely. Well, Coach, you've been a great resource today. We deeply appreciate your time.
Certainly, Paul. And I just tell you, I really appreciate your show. I retired from coaching a couple of years ago, and I get home every day now and throw your show on after I get done teaching. I'm still in teaching chemistry and physics, and enjoying that. But it was time to hang the whistle up. So I do appreciate you, Paul.
Well, Coach, you be well. Thank you very much.
Okay, you too, sir.
Man, chemistry and physics, easily my two worst subjects. That was fascinating. And again, I know some of you with young kids are going, these guys don't know what they're, I mean, how could they be this far out? But it is so, it just, in talking about the evolution of sports and what is happening now, and for those who are wondering, how do we get on that subject? Almost all the top players now are going literally out of the classroom in December to the college campus, and that is essential. Thank you very, very much for the call. Dana is in Kentucky. Hello, Dana.
Good afternoon, Mr. Feinbaum. Wonderful to speak with you.
Thank you.
Long-time listener and fan, first-time successful caller. I was beginning to think the show was like the Wizard of Oz or something, as many times as I called and never gotten through. But I just wanted to give a perspective from an outsider's viewpoint on your debate that is a continuing debate about the best caller.
Yes.
There is no debate that Legend is your best caller. He's passionate about the game. He knows the game, and he's just there to have fun. It cracks me up how he pushes, I'm not going to mention names, but how he pushes buttons and they react, and he's like a puppeteer just above dancing and laughing. He's just wanting to have fun. He knows how much of what he says is just BS to get to them, and it is hysterical how they react.
Yeah, I mean, I think the great comics, whether they're callers or not, have to be absurd without letting anyone know they're being absurd. And he, yeah, I would bet Legend knows exactly what he's doing.
Touche. But, you know, kudos to him. He made a mistake early in life. He made amends for it, and he seems to be living the way he should be now, and more kudos for that. But he seems to be a genuine person, regardless of what some of the other callers have to say about him. But if you have to tell someone you're pretty smart or you're the best at something, you're probably not. Larry is hysterical. Sometimes he's confusing, and I believe if Larry called at 10 a.m. rather than 6 p.m., he might be a little more coherent. But Larry's a pretty funny guy, too. But anyway, I just wanted to give my perspective from the outside looking in. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you very much. And I think what we heard from Legend, we've heard it a number of times, but especially last week in the aftermath of what happened in both Tuscaloosa and in Athens, he does care, and he has a big heart. Let's take a break. We'll talk to Kelly Harper next hour. We'll talk to Matt Zenitz about the transfer portal, what's happening in there, and will we ever fix it? That's coming up next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And we are back, and it's really great to welcome back to our program Matt Zenitz from On Three. We got to know Matt many years ago when he covered Alabama, doggedly covered Alabama for AL.com. First of all, Matt, thanks for the time and welcome back to the show.
Paul and I appreciate you having me on.
It is always great. Before we get to coaching searches, I do want to just ask you a general question about the portal. It's now closed. Everyone seems to be on the same tune of the chaos that exists. As you watch it and you cover so many different aspects of college sports, how big of an issue is that portal right now to coaches and their ability to try to deal with it?
It is essentially college free agency at this point that coaches are going to have to deal with every year. So there are a lot of coaches, as I'm sure you can imagine, as I'm sure you've gotten on your end too, very, very much stressed at this point of the year and at different points during the course of the last couple of months. But you have not only the recruiting element of guys that go in that are worthwhile for your school to go after, but you have the recruiting element where you have to essentially re-recruit your own guys every year to prevent your top players that you don't want to lose from going into the portal. And I feel like each year you obviously see not only a significant number of guys at this point that are going into the portal, but you're seeing some top tier players who it's not like they're sitting on the bench, not contributing, stuff like that, that are curious to test out their market value and just see what kind of interest that they can get ultimately going into the portal also and creating situations where there are some very talented game-changing type players that are going in. And the final number for this portal window, where there are still guys that can go in that are grad transfers, but obviously aside from that, you have not graduated, you cannot go into the portal until May at this point. But from December 5th through January 18th, there were 1,325, I think was the number, FBS scholarship football players that went to the portal. That's a lot.
It's an amazing number. Matt, I want to ask you about the Alabama situation. And you covered, I don't know how many coaching searches while you were on the beat at the university, covering the University of Alabama for AL.com. Before we even get to the names, how would you describe Nick Saban's process in conducting these coaching searches?
I think when you look historically at guys that he's hired throughout the course of his time in Alabama, including even just during the last few years, that there's been some semblance of a connection there, where has either history with coach being hired or to go along with that, somebody that he's close with, like a Bill Belichick, having history with coach that's ultimately hired, with Bill O'Brien obviously being a good example of that last part of it. But the connection part of it and having history with a person and or respective coach being highly thought of by someone very close to Saban, those are always important boxes to check when working through trying to figure out who could be a viable option.
I realize you weren't in his office, but it seemed like you were pretty close to being in there based on your reporting. But does he just work the phones on a constant and continual basis? I mean, he's, you know, in these two cases, before I even let you speak, I mean, we pretty much knew these openings were there. So I have a feeling he's had plenty of time to think about this.
I agree with you. And Saban is somebody who, and this is the case for a lot of coaches around the country, you always have kind of like a running list where something happens, you have an idea of guys that you would go after in those kinds of situations. I think Saban would fall in the category of being one of those types of guys that is always prepared for if, when something happens, and has a general idea of some coaches that would be good to target and go after in these kinds of situations.
And just as an aside, you covered him for a number of years. I think I asked Mike Rodak this question the other day, who now covers Nick Saban, but what is it like on a daily basis being around someone who's not particularly accessible to the media?
It can make it challenging as a beat writer. definitely can make it challenging, but at the same time, just important to work different angles and different relationships and all of that in order to just try to stay on top of things from an information standpoint as much as possible.
In speaking of the rest of college football right now, Matt, there were a number of changes in the offseason. It's over now, we think. Can't imagine there being any other major changes. What stood out in terms of not only the head coachings, but in terms of the coordinators, just the whole coaching carousel?
Yeah. As far as the coordinator part of it, there were some really fascinating moves. And I'm not ready to say that the assistant coach part of the cycle or coordinator part of the cycle is just over yet. I think that and I know it probably feels like the cycle has been going on for a significant amount of time at this point. But speaking realistically, there's probably still a good month to month and a half left in this deal, where there are going to be moves being made, some of them dictated by the NFL cycle, where, as is the case every year, you could see NFL teams poach and hire top guys from the college space, which in turn will lead to maybe unexpected, attractive openings at some high-level places. And I would think that's definitely going to be the case during the course of the next few weeks. But as far as some of the moves that have been made already, obviously you have the Pete Golding to Ole Miss type moves, Garrett Riley going to Clemson, which is very interesting for a number of reasons, including just Dabo kind of switching things up with what he had done approach-wise with those roles previously. Like last year, for example, had promoted from within. Obviously this year, I think recognizing just maybe some of the problems that we were there from offensive standpoint or whatever, not only went outside the box from what he had done before, but took a significant swing and landed one of the top up-and-coming offensive minds in the country. But even outside of those, like, obvious ones that have been very much talked about, you have like Phil Longo to Wisconsin, which is extremely, extremely interesting to me, because I think if you talk to or poll fans around the country, everyone has like preconceived notion of what they view Wisconsin offense as being. Wisconsin's offense moving forward with Phil Longo is going to look a lot different than what Wisconsin's offense has looked like at any point in its recent history. You have Chip Lindsey, who people around the country, I'm sure, are familiar with from time at Auburn and as Troy's head coach, and even this past year at UCF, going into a situation now at North Carolina where he'll be responsible for managing one of the top players in college football with Drake May, who obviously was a Heisman contender this year. You have Ohio State situation where it's kind of interesting just because of how high profile Ohio State is. Just I feel like it hasn't been talked about enough, just the change in offensive philosophy and approach there with Ryan Day and him scaling back or taking a step back with the play calling part of his responsibilities, and now promoting Brian Hartline, one of the top rising stars in the country within the coaching world, to the OC spot, and Hartline being in position to lead the way from a play calling perspective. So those things would definitely come to mind. And then one that I'll throw out to go along with that is, speaking of Alabama, a coach who went from being a coordinator to taking a step back and taking a non-coordinator position at Alabama, Austin Armstrong, who was the defensive coordinator at Southern Miss. I think he's 27, 28 years old, something like that, just described by coaches that have been around him as like a whiz kid type figure. It's an interesting hire for Saban to get somebody like that who's had success as a coordinator and now to get him in a non-coordinator capacity. Sorry for the long-winded
answer. Matt Jenness with it. Matt, as we're talking about assistant coaches, I couldn't help but ask a naive question here. You know, we talk about coaching trees and Saban and others, but how big of a role do these mega agents play in all of this, and do they represent the assistants like they do the head coaches?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the connections that I was talking about with Saban, I know it's definitely a popular school of thought, just considering Nick being rep by CAA and throughout the course of recent Alabama history, a good amount of Alabama assistants have been rep by CAA also, even though that's not just like a necessity for being hired by Alabama. But the agents around the country definitely play a big role when it comes to this kind of stuff. And head coaches, whether it's Nick Saban or others in the head coaching space, when they have openings, they're definitely reliant on their representation to help put them in a spot where they're as aware as possible of coaches that should be on their radar. So I'm sure Jimmy Sexton is somebody that Nick Saban has consulted with at different points during the course of the last couple of weeks to make sure he's as up to speed as possible of coaches that should be on his radar for respective spots.
Yeah, I bring that up because I asked someone the other day in Alabama, I said, where do you think Saban is going? And he said, you mean Jimmy Sexton? And that's the question to you. Matt, it's always great to catch up. Best of your family, and can't wait to see you soon.
Sounds good, Paul. I appreciate it.
Matt Jenness joining us, longtime reporter in Alabama covering Saban, now with On3. We are heading to the break. Kelly Harper next hour, piggybacking our first guest tonight, which was, of course, Dawn Stegley. Your phone calls around the corner.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we're back. Bob is up next in Georgia. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Paul. How are you?
We are doing great. Thank you for calling.
All right. You had a caller earlier that wanted to know about how the kids were you graduating from high school early and getting into college early?
Correct.
And I can answer how it started, at least. I was the recruiting coordinator at Georgia, and the first person to ever come in early was Eric Zier. Of course, you know who that is. Anyway, I actually signed Eric in my office, but he'd already been in school. What happened, and I'm assuming it's still the same way today. I've, of course, been out of it for a long time. But the when we got his transcript, I looked at it. You know, you have, it's basically a checklist. They have to have completed, you know, specific courses, which would qualify them for graduation. And Eric went to Marietta. I guess they were on the block system. I'll be honest, I don't remember that. I noticed he had completed high school senior English. This was, probably in October or November. No, well, actually, it would have been in December, yeah. And so I looked at the rest of it, and each of the senior classes that Georgia required that they complete, he had already completed. So I took it to Glada Gunnels at the time. Now it's Glada Horvat. She was in charge of academics. And I said, could he enroll now? He looks like he's completed everything. She said, yes, he can. So at the time, he was probably leaning toward either Notre Dame or Florida State, just because of their offenses. You probably remember we were kind of switching over to passing offense.
Right.
And I called and told him, I said, how would you like to come in and compete in the spring? And so he said, can I call you back? But anyway, his dad actually called me and said, you know, explain it. And I did, and said, if he wants, he can come in January. And gosh, within a half hour, they called me and said, okay, he's coming to Georgia.
That is so amazing.
But he was the very first one. And Paul Slaybaugh wrote an article about it.
Yeah, Bob, if I follow this story correctly, didn't you start under Coach Dooley?
Yes.
I can only imagine your thoughts on what has happened this year and you know, losing coach and watching Georgia do it again.
I went to Georgia, so you know, when I got that job, I was already a big Georgia fan and a season ticket holder. So I am still a big Georgia fan. My children went to Georgia, and it's been a great year, a great 2 years.
Well, and I realize it's been a few years, but what are your thoughts about what's currently going on in recruiting and in college athletics?
Well, I mean, the NIL, I think I would say it like probably most coaches and you. I have no problem with the players getting paid. The problem is that they're using it to recruit them. And if they would have just initially said the rule, you can now pay players, here are the guidelines, but they never put guidelines in. And that's that, you know, I have an issue with that a little bit, obviously, but the NIL is fine. Transfer portal, I have mixed emotions about, and NIL, of course, is heavily involved in that now.
If I'm doing the math in my head, you would have been there around the time. Were you involved in recruiting Kirby?
Yes, I was.
Okay. I mean, not to make any – tell us about that.
Well, I still bump into him occasionally because I actually am a high school teacher at Jefferson High School. I teach World War II.
Oh, my goodness.
And we actually have a World War II class. I became a sports agent, and then I retired and couldn't stand it. So now I'm doing the hobby, and they pay me to go to Europe, take kids to Europe for 2 weeks too. So it's great. But our last, of course, Malachi Starks played for us at Jefferson. And now we've got, I think he's rated as the sixth best player in the country. He's a junior, Sammy Brown. So I've gotten to watch some really good high school football players. A lot of fun. I don't do anything with the football program, though.
What a career. Well, Bob, thank you so much. You be well. Thanks for sharing some stories with us.
All right. Enjoy your show. Thank you.
You bet. Former Georgia coach Bob Pitard, who was the recruiting coordinator for many, many years, as many of you dog fans could could figure that out. Let's check in with Mike next. Hey, Mike.
Mike?
Yes, Mike, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Is that you, Mr. Pinebaum?
Yeah, that's me. Good afternoon, Mike.
Hey, buddy. How are you?
We are well. Thank you.
All right. I was just simply calling. First time I've ever called. I just heard a thing on yours. I listen to you all the time. But,
thank you.
Just heard a thing with you and Cole Kubik.
Right.
And it's, I just wanted to say that it's very impressive. And just, I'm an Alabama fan from way back. Ozzie Newsome, Major Ogilvy years and everything else. And just want to say it is, I was very impressed with y'all's
well, thank
interview.
You, Mike. By the way, we saw Ozzie in Atlanta for the SEC game and just had a blast talking to him.
Really? I mean, it's just amazing, man. I appreciate riding around here listening to you guys, and sometimes some of the things come back over. And like I said, I'm a diehard Alabama fan. But that thing with Cole Kubik a while ago that I heard y'all say or heard you and him talking about, I'm just very impressed with Auburn and some of the people they have, and just want to wish them well.
Hey, thank you, Mike. You take care of yourself. Cheerleader is up next.
Hey, Paul, that was a good question you asked the reporter from Alabama about if the assistant coaches got in to have an agent.
Well, cheerleader, if I could tell you, if I could confess, I knew the answer because it. I mean, there's so many stories about coaches and agents and the fact that really the agents run college football now. They control these coaching searches.
Okay, now listen, are we as your callers going to have to in the near future hire an agent to be able to get on your show on the talk?
You know, it's probably not a bad idea for callers to start having agents as well as assistant coaches.
Well, let me bring back up some old times. Okay. When Larry called in and he talked about the women and everybody got upset for several weeks, you know, his apology to me was just fine. It was just fine. But do you remember, I don't know how many years ago, and where is Charles from Real Town?
He's alive but missing in action.
Well, do you remember when he called? And it wasn't long after I had called that day, and he called in, and he said, "Hey, what'd he call you, Miss Feinbaum?" Or I don't know what he called you. But he said, "I don't think you should allow women callers on your show." And I just got the biggest kick out of that. And, you know, we didn't get the vote until 1921. So we have come a pretty long way.
Yeah, back there was a time, cheerleader, I probably would have joked with you about this, but under today's construct, I'm just going to say whatever you – that's great. You're 100% correct.
Yeah. But, Charles, if you're out there and you hear this, call in. And do you remember the time that y'all tried to set him up with a date?
Well, I do remember trying to set him – now, that wasn't all that long ago. It was about a year ago. Some lady in Arkansas, wasn't it?
This was an older lady and I don't know where she was from. It was the South.
Oh, I do remember that. Yeah, that was a different one.
And she said, Charles said, yes, he would go. And then the lady, you know, she took her to the
Wasn't that on, like, Valentine's Day or something? And then he started asking her about her feet or something?
Yes, something. But anyway, so she agreed to go on the date, and then he said he wouldn't go.
Yeah, no, we tried to help Charles out, and I have met Charles a couple of times, and he's really a pretty funny guy in person. I don't know what he's doing right now in Real Town, Alabama, but we do need you, Charles. We'll take a break. More to come. The head coach of the Lady Vols is around the corner.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we are back, and let's continue with more phone calls. Eric is up next. Hello, Eric.
Hey, Hey, man, how are you? Hey, let me ask you a question. Now, that LSU thing with Brian Kelly getting paid over $1 million extra, now, what do you think's behind that right there, really? I mean, I know they said it was direct deposit, and then he wanted it put into an LLC. What do you think? What's your opinion on that? Because there's a lot of things that can go with that. I mean, you got to look at that's going. He's going to have to pay taxes on that money. They're talking about taking it back the following year. What is your take on that, Paul? I want to know what you really think.
Call me naive, but I think it was a simple mistake that somebody forgot to reconstitute. I mean, anybody that makes money and pays out various fees to different people is used to that, where it was just a simple, it was basically an accounting error.
Well, they may need to hire him a new accountant or somebody that's looking, is somebody doing that, or do they have a system, a computer system? I mean, do you know?
Well, I think there's a template for how
human error?
There's a template for how he was paid. And then he changed it with, a lot of people that make that kind of money use an LLC for tax purposes. So they just never changed it. So he ended up getting more money I'm guessing the tax structure would have been different. Not that I know anything about public accounting. Crimson Knight is up next.
Hey,
hello, Crimson.
Mr. Feinbaum.
How are you?
How you doing?
We are great. Thank you.
I'm fine. I'm a first-time caller, but my wife has become a loyal listener. She listens at work, when she shouldn't. But I just wanted to call you and, just let you know that we enjoy your show.
Where do you guys live?
Opelika, Alabama.
Okay. So you're down there in Auburn country, huh?
Yeah, we're in Auburn country. We got a house divided, but we're in Auburn country.
Well, I tell you what, it means a lot. You tell your wife thank you for me, and if she ever decides to leave you, I'm available.
Okay, don't put it out there like that, Paul, because she might take you up.
Well, hey, you guys be well. Thanks so much. Appreciate it. That's great. And then here I go again. Sandy is in Austin. Hello, Sandy.
Hey, hi, Paul.
I haven't
talked to you since the end of last year. So
oh, yeah. Well, great to hear from you again.
Yes, you as well. I hope you're having a good New Year's.
We are.
Good, good. Well, I think my bigger question on this Brian Kelly story is who actually caught the error? Because to me, it speaks to a person's character. If you know you're getting that much money extra and you don't say something,
I'll give you a wild guess because I really haven't read anything about it, but I'm guessing that whoever takes care of his manager, his money, his wife, I don't know who it is, probably noticed that usually when you make that much money, you're not paying attention.
Okay, unlike some of us.
Yeah,
huh?
No, it's not like the average person, like me, I'll check out my bank account or you, or you'll see what you're being paid. These people make so much, they probably never even look, but somebody must be in charge of his bills and caught it. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern.